Okay, we're up to Perakhov Hey. New topic. Perakhov Hey deals with a nevuah that relates to the Umay Sa'ilam. This begins a series of nevuahs where Hashem. We have this by all of the Nevi'im, by Yeshaya, and we have in Yirmiyah, and Treyasar. We have some of the Nevi'im in Treyasar, the same idea, where the Nevi'im don't just give over messages to Klal Yisrael, their role is international. They give over messages to the nations of the world. So this Nevuah, this parak, is a short parak, it's the easy parak. It deals with a message that Yechezkel relates to the nations of Amoin and Moav, and also at the very end, Edoin. So there are three nations, Amoin, Moav, and Edom. There has to be some connection between the three, so maybe as we go through slowly, we'll be able to see the connection between these three nations. Amoin and Moav are very, very, they're related almost to Klal Yisrael in that they are the descendants of Lot. Avraham had a nephew. Avram's nephew was Lot. Avram had a brother, Haran. Haran died, Al-Kiddush Hashem. Very, very powerful idea that he was the first person to give up his life for Hashem. Nimrod threw him into the Kivshan Ha'esh, even though he thought that he would miraculously survive, just like his brother, Avram, miraculously survived. Nevertheless, I mean, bottom line is, when someone throws you into a furnace, what do you really expect? And the fact is that Nimrod, he recognized to some degree that there is a creator, and Haran recognized there is a creator, and he gave up his life for Hashem by being thrown into the Kivshan Ha'esh. Avraham felt guilt, it seems. He felt a sense of guilt. He felt a sense of a responsibility that it was only because of him. His brother gave up his life. You know, this is a brother. It's not just a person. It's a very powerful parsha in the Torah, and it's not even really. It's not in the Torah. It's not even there. It's not in the Torah. Yeah. So it's very interesting. What the Torah writes and Torah does not write. Yeah. When this past Shabbos we read about the Nesiim, the Torah goes over and over all 12 Nesiim to say the same thing again and again. And yet this is a very major event in the life of Avram, and must have been extremely traumatic that his own brother, Basar Vadam, died in front of his eyes by being thrown into a Kivshan
Ha'esh. Did he really have faith, though? Did he have
faith? Well, I mean, you have to say he did. You can't say he totally didn't have faith because the bottom line is, Nimrod asked him, do you believe in Hashem or do you not believe in Hashem? And he said, I believe in Hashem. Now, even though we know that until that point in time he was hedging his bets, he would say, let me see what happens to Avram. If he will survive, I'll also jump in. If Avram will not survive.
He was going to Avram's cocktail.
I know, but still in all, I'm sure didn't in the back of his mind, he probably crossed his mind, I don't have his zechusim. I'm sure he's a lot wiser. Haran was obviously was a lot more clever and wiser than we'll ever be. We're going back over here during a time in the world where people, we have to assume, the Skadim Hadaros, these were extremely great people. Today, let's say you see a very great big Rebbe goes and a miracle happens. A very holy person. Do you expect you'll merit the same miracle? He has zechusim. This person, I recognize the reason why Hashem did for him a very great miracle was because he's a very big tzaddik.
That's actually a good analogy. One of his chassidim might go along with him to be in the Rebbe's coattails.
If you're holding on to the Rebbe, but if you're not holding on to the Rebbe, the Rebbe does want. If you throw it into the fire with Avraham Avinu, so maybe you'll get lucky. But here, Avram was thrown into the fire and he came out. So, just like Avram, Hashem did a miracle for Avram, Hashem's doing a miracle for me. Who am I? Who am I that Hashem's doing a miracle for me? I'm just an ordinary person. And yet he went into the fire. That speaks volumes, It speaks volumes that he, to some degree, he did give up his life l'shem Hashem. Avram obviously felt responsible, and that's why we find Avram taking care of this man's, his brother's child, his nephew. At Kidekach, Avram went out on a suicide mission to save Lot when the four kings captured Lot in the World War. The four kings against the five kings, and the four kings won, then the four kings captured Lot. Vayishma Avram ki nishba Ochiv. It says Ochiv, his brother. Why does it say his brother? It's not his brother, it's his nephew. He looked at his nephew as if it was his brother. because my brother, he's my brother, he died because I was Moser Nefesh, and therefore he also was Moser Nefesh. I have a responsibility to my brother to take care of his child. It's an incredible thing. What came from, by the way, from Haran? Lot. What came from Lot? Rus. What came from Rus? Melech HaMashiach. So Hashem does not deny reward from any living creature. Okay, that's a very powerful idea that HaKadosh Baruch Hu brought Mashiach, the Melech HaMashiach, David, Malchus, the whole Melech, the whole world will come, the whole world will reach its purpose because, and who does it trace back to? It traces back to Haran. Why Haran? He was the first person that gave up his life for Hashem. It's an incredible thing. So we have over here now. Who
actually,
now?
Everyone was Meisenefesh on the way. Amar was Meisenefesh.
Okay, that's right.
Rus was
Meisenefesh. All.
Eglon was killed. Was Meisenefesh.
And all comes back to Haran. It's an incredible thing. And Mashiach, and the world comes to its purpose through Melech HaMashiach. Now, on the way, there's a little baggage. There's a little psoilus that gets thrown out on the side, and that is the nations of Ammon and Moab. Ammon and Moab, this terrible Maisa, where the two daughters of Lot, when they were after the destruction of Sodom, they thought the world came to an end, and they lived with their father, and they had a child. One was more embarrassed, was less embarrassed than the other. One was called Moab, means Me'av. That's a statement. There's no embarrassment, there's no shame whatsoever. There's a kitzrik on Moab more than Ammon, because Moab, there's a lack of moral shame. It's true. You had a child with your father, but you don't have to go and announce it to the world. You don't have to broadcast it, and therefore that there is a tviya. Why did she call the child Moav Me'af? The second sister she called Amon, my nation. She didn't explicitly say that it comes from my father, so therefore there's more of an inyan of tznius, had tznei leches. But nevertheless, these two children came from Lot. By the way, some of the farshim say that they did it l'shem shemayim. They did it l'shem shemayim because they felt that whole world.
That of course is a machlok.
It's machlokis, and also that's why someone said the reason why she called her Moav is that no one should come along and say that she became pregnant through a miracle, through a malach, through Hashem, immaculate conception.
Rav Moshe
Feinstein says in Maisa, there was a person, Rav Moshe, when he was a rav in Russia, there was a balabas who made litzanis. He could not understand how in the world these two children, these women, can go and do something so disgusting and name the babies after their father. Me'av Amoin. And he made litzanis. And the day came when this person became, was gravely ill. He had a misa mishuna. And right before he died, he told Rav Moshe that he had a dream. The two daughters of Lot came to him in a dream. And they said to him, how dare you speak about us in such an ugly way? The reason why we named our children after our father is l'shem shemayim. No one should come along and say that Amon, that the children are like what we know to be Christianity, immaculate conception. Who would go live with their father? Incest, we would never do that. So it must be the Kodesh Baruch Hu himself came and made us pregnant. And therefore our children, they're gods. In order no one should do something, someone should say something so ridiculous, we made it clear that we are pregnant from our father, and we did it l'shem shemayim because we thought the world came to an end, or we felt that this was Hayra Shah, whatever all of this means, they did it. And that's why this person said, that's why I'm suffering this Misa Mishuna as a Kapara, and I have Charata for speaking about the daughters of Lot in such a fashion. That puts a whole new spin on the daughters of Lot. Amun Amar. Any event, over here we have these two nations came into existence, and these two nations, they we learned this right, this is the second time we're learning about Amun Amayav. We learned about Amun Amayav a couple of prokhim back, and we'll see the Mepharshim explain to us why there are two different sections dealing with Amun Amayav. One deals with the first state of punishment, and this deals with a second level, which we'll explain in a few moments. But there is one thing that is very clear. There is a very great tevia, a very great complaint against these two nations. When Klal Yisrael was traveling in the Midbar, the 40 years, they did not assist. Asher lo kidmu eschem balechem uvamayim. When they were traveling in the desert, Klal Yisrael was in a very desperate situation. They needed bread, they needed food, and these two nations refused to assist Klal Yisrael. What's the tviya? Their whole existence only comes from Klal Yisrael. Avram Avinu, the forefather of Klal Yisrael, was Moser Nefesh, went out on a suicide mission to save the father of Amon Umov, Lot. If not for Avram Avinu, Lot would have been killed. Lo would have died, and there never would have been a nation of Ammon and Moab. So Ammon and Moab had a duty to reciprocate to the Makir Tov and at least provide some minimal assistance to Klal Yisrael when they travel in the desert. They were lacking Hakaras HaToif. And that is, in Chazal, one of the worst possible midos a person can have, not to be Makir Toif. And therefore Hashem says, because of their lack of reciprocation, Hakaras HaToif, they may not come into Klal Yisrael. They may not come to Hashem. They did not come and greet you with lechem amayim. What's so terrible? It was they from all the nations that should have been the first ones to give lechem amayim, because they are the ones whose very existence only comes because of Klal Yisrael, because Avraham was moiser nefesh to save their forefather Lot. So here we're describing not only are they not allowed to come into Klal Yisrael, here this Pesukim Yecheskel tells us that they are going to be obliterated. They're going to be wiped off the face of the earth. When? At the time of Paras Umadai. Now let's just give us some background. There are going to be two stages to their destruction. We have to remember, before we deal with Ammon. We learned two Parakim back where Nebuchadnezzar now has a desire to conquer the world. What's called Wanderlust, I think it's called, Wanderlust. He has this Mishigas, he has to go conquer the world. And he goes out, he doesn't have a plan, he goes out on the road, gets in the car, gets in the highway, and they start marching, and they come to the crossroads, and they flip a coin. Should we conquer Yerushalayim, or should we conquer the nation of Ammon? Ammon at that point was a very great nation. And the capital of Ammon is Rabbas Bnei Ammon. And he said, for sure we're going to conquer the nation of Ammon, because Klal Yisrael, it's impossible. They are protected by Hashem. There's no way we will succeed. And yet, when they flipped the coin, just to be sure, every indication they got was they should indeed go to Yerushalayim. So after all of the messages and messengers and all of Nichush, they ended up going to the omens, they ended up going to Yerushalayim, and the people in Rabbas Bnei Ammon were jumping for joy. They said, Baruch Hashem, Nebuchadnezzar did not come for us. And oh, was so happy that our arch enemy, the Jewish people, what they did to them, I don't know, was so happy, anti-Semitism, so happy that Hashem, that Yerushalayim is going to suffer. So for that sin, what happened next? For that joy, what happened? Nebuchadnezzar, after he conquered Yerushalayim, after the Churban Beis Hamikdash, what was next on his list? Ammon. Indeed, he went and he conquered Ammon. Now, when he conquered Ammon, it wasn't all that bad. He conquered them. He obviously probably killed many of the people. He sent into exile many of the people, and he set up a situation where the nation of Ammon had to pay taxes, homage to Nebuchadnezzar. But he let the nation of Ammon, he let them remain a nation. It's just that they had to show their respect for Nebuchadnezzar. Then, let's fast forward 70 years later, when Nebuchadnezzar was conquered by Paras Umadai, really namely Paras, when the Persian Koresh conquered Nebuchadnezzar, and Nebuchadnezzar was reduced, the nation of Babylon was reduced to nothing, then Koresh and Daryovish Hamadai, they decided, let's go and conquer all of the countries of the world that were conquered previously by Nebuchadnezzar. And one of the first ones on their list was Ammon. But here they weren't so generous like Nebuchadnezzar. When they came into Ammon, they obliterated Ammon. They took over. They moved in. They exiled the people, they killed the people, and they actually moved in. They built palaces, they settled the land, and then or eventually it was completely destroyed. We'll see more in the Pesukim, to the point where Ammon ceased to exist as a nation, period. Completely wiped off the map. So that second level of conquest by Paras Umadai was much worse than the first level of conquest that happened at the time of Nebuchadnezzar. What we learned about back a couple of parakim before about Ammon and Moab, we had a similar nevuah, was describing what Nebuchadnezzar was going to do to the nation of Ammon and Moab in punishment for celebrating the Churban of Klal Yisrael. This parak describes what's going to happen to Amnu Mov in the second conquest, when Paras Modai conquered Nebuchadnezzar, and now it's their turn to flex their muscles throughout the world, and then they're going to obliterate the nation of Amma. Vahid Vashem Elaylem, Perak Chof Hei, Pasik Al, Vahid Vashem Elaylem, Ben Adam, Simponecha El Bnei Amon. Set your face against this nation, Vihinovei Alehem, and give them the following prediction, a Nevu in the form of what's going to happen to them at the end. Pasigimel, Vyamarto Livne Amoin, Shimudvar Hashem Elokim. Listen to what Hashem says. Koyamar Hashem Elokim. Yan, because Omrech, because you have said He'och. He'och means, it means hooray, an expression of joy. Hooray, El Mikdash, we know the expression hip hip hooray, that comes from the Crusaders. When they destroyed Yerushalayim, their expression was hip hip hooray. So it's not a Jewish thing for Jewish children to say, what? It's a terrible thing. You're celebrating your own defeat when you say hip hip hooray. So we're brainwashed. We think it means like, yay. It's an expression of joy. It is the words that the Crusaders used to express their joy when they conquered Yerushalayim. So it's not a good thing for a Jewish person to say the term, the expression, hip hooray. It's like you don't say, I keep my fingers crossed. You ever hear Jews say that all the time? I keep my fingers crossed. I remember during the first Persian Gulf War, we were listening to the radio, maybe we were watching television or the radio, and I remember they were interviewing some people living in Yerushalayim, and when Saddam was sending Scuds into Yerushalayim, and they were interviewing there, probably Ted Koppel was interviewing someone, and the technology wasn't like it is today, where you know, with internet, before internet days, it was like, you know, a little choppy, talking to someone in Yerushalayim, and talking to Jews in Yerushalayim, and they're in bomb shelters, and they have gas masks, and they're terrified, and he's interviewing, what's the situation? And these Jews said, well, so far so good, we're keeping our fingers crossed. And I remember my father, he was so embarrassed. How can you say, keep my fingers crossed? Keep my fingers crossed means shasi ve'erif. It means you're a Christian, you're a good Christian, and you keep your fingers crossed, you know, you make a shasi ve'erif, I have my faith in Yashka. How could a Jew say in an Ace Tzara, I'm keeping my fingers crossed? My father cringed when he heard that. It's ignorance. You don't know what you're saying. Okay, you just push it, don't know. It's not their fault. So here too, when you say hibberay, it's not a good thing. Well, here we have the earliest record of this idea of he'och. You have this all over the place. He'och. He'och el mikdashi, when they said, oh, let us rejoice. It's a joy that the base HaMikdash is being destroyed. All the farshim here, if you go look at the page, everyone says there are three types of joy. Whether it's the Malbum, or it's go look in the Maharikara, you look at all the farshim here, they all say that there were three elements. There are three elements, three dimensions of joy. And if you really want to dissect it, you match up what these three things are. I don't know what they really are, but the first one is, they said, He'och el Mikdashi. Number two was ki nichol. No, I'm sorry. El mikdashi ki nichol. Nichol comes from the word chulin. My mikdash. Mikdash is kodesh. My holy base hamikdash has been defiled. Has been stripped of its sanctity. Number two, the el admas Yisrael ki noshama. The land of Yisrael has become desolate. This simply refers to the Aseres Hashvatim. And this took place back, really, during the time of Sancheriv. The El Beis Yehuda, and the third joy was that the Tushvatim, the Malchus of Yehuda, Ki Holchu Bagoyla, they also have gone into exile. So the Bnei Amon, it has 3 days of celebration. One to celebrate the destruction of the Beis HaMikdash, one day to celebrate the Churban of the Aseres HaShvatim, and one day to celebrate the Golus of Malchus Yehuda, the Malchus of Yehuda and Binyamin in Yerushalayim. So therefore Hashem says, in punishment for your celebration, Pasuk Dal, Luchain, therefore, Hinini, Noisnach, I will deliver you, Livnei Kedem. Who are Bnei Kedem? This is Paras Umodai. Paras Umodai, the Persians and the Medians, this was the ones who took over Nebuchadnezzar in time of Purim. The Purim miracle was during the Golos of Paras Umodai. I will deliver you livnei kedem limo rosha as an inheritance for them. The yishvu tirois sehem bach. Now here's a very powerful idea, is that when they come to destroy you, it's not going to be like when Nebuchadnezzar came to destroy you. When Nebuchadnezzar came to destroy you, they just wanted to establish authority. Who is the boss? Who are you going to pay taxes to? You pay taxes to Nebuchadnezzar, but you can remain living in your land. Nebuchadnezzar didn't have any desire to take over. What is he going to do with the land? He just wants their money. You pay taxes, everything will be good. But when Paras Umadai, they moved in, they dwelt. Yishu means they dwelt. Tiroi Sehem, their own palaces. They built and established homes, palaces, places to worship idols, churches. Tiroi Sehem has many different meanings. It simply means palaces which connote all different types of functions, institutions. Bach in you. V'nasnu bach mishkinehem. They will put in your land their dwelling places. Heima yochlu firyech, they will eat your fruits. Veheima yishtu chalovech, and they will drink your milk. Okay, they're going to take over your natural resources, and they're going to completely occupy the land and become the new balabais. Okay, chalovech, I'm assuming means milk, not fat, right? And this form it means to drink, yeah. Doesn't to drink your milk. What?
What's it there for? He's sending you to give Navi to Ammon. You didn't want us. You didn't tell us anything. We did.
So the answer is they should have. They made a mistake. The answer is they're guilty. They're accountable for their actions. Like as we started with today, that they should realize they have a duty of Hakaras HaToif, the Klal Yisrael.
What are they going to do now? Huh?
What?
They can't do anything. They're getting dainish. They're going to get dainish.
Yeah, that's right. Well, maybe you make a good point. So is it all too late? So maybe what it means is maybe it's not all too late. If the Navi is giving them Musa, maybe it means there's still hope.
It makes sense
tshuva.
For the Navi to tell it to Bnei Yisrael that they were so bad that I'm punishing them this way. What's he accomplishing by telling Bnei Amon?
So you have to say it means that they have still an opportunity to do teshuva. Because you find many places where Hashem gives Musa Klal Yisrael, and it's a prediction. It's written as a prediction, and it never happened. Why? Because we got the message, at least to some degree, and we did a partial teshuva, and that held off the full scope of punishment. So here also, if Yechezkel is telling this to this nation, obviously they still have a chance. They still have a chance to do teshuva, to recognize that they have a duty to be makir toif to Klal Yisrael and to shape up, to behave. And if they're not going to behave, they're going to be obliterated. Let's see what it says over here in Mufashim. All these psukim go Aleph through Pasik Dal. Four psukim together first in the Mitzvah David. Sim Ponecha, Sabev Ponecha, El Mul Ben Amon. I want you to go and direct your attention to Amon, Yan Amrech, Heoch. Why? Why are you going to suffer? Because you express joy. Ritzon Eloimar, Bavur Shesomacht. You rejoiced. Al Mikdash Yasher Nischalel Limaser Biyad Humais. When you saw that my Beis Hamikdash was profaned and given over to the nations, you rejoiced. Therefore, Lochein Pasig Dal, I will deliver you to the Bnei Kedem. Who are the Bnei Kedem? Heim Paras Umadai. Hayashrim Bimizracha Shal Bnei Amon. They live in the east of Amon. Bimiktsoya Mizracha Sephanis in the northeast. The Yeshu, when they come to live in your land, written Aloima, Lo Yavo Rak Lishvol Shalolachas, they're not just going to come to plunder your assets and then leave. Vilo Uchaderech Sha'asa Nivuchanetzer. They're not going to do to you what Nivuchanetzer. He just came and stole all your money and left. No, Ela Yisak Vushama, when they come, they're going to set up shop. They're going to live there. The Amidu Boch Ar Moinois Umishkanois. They're going to build palaces, they're going to build homes, v'yoichlu, they're going to eat the pre-artzech, v'yishtu chalev tzoynech. Here it says the fat of your sheep, so he means fat. He ta'yishir chalev means, it means fat, right? Chalev means fat. Can't mean of milk, there is no milk from sheep. Sheep don't produce milk, cows produce milk. It means the fat of, what?
Or goats,
but not sheep, right? So it means chalev, to drink. Normally say chalovech means here your fat. Okay, so your fat, they're going to drink your fat. I'm not sure why drinking your fat is something you normally drink. You melt, you drink it. It's not really what you do. I'm not sure. I don't know. You have an English? What does it say?
Yeah, he says they will eat the fruit of your land and they will drink the milk of the flocks.
The milk. Chalev. So here it says Chalev Tzoynech. I don't know, whatever this means. Okay, so we have over here, this is the Mitzudos. Let's see the Radak. Now, you know, I'm going to try to skip around, skip some of the Radak. The Radaks that are...
Cholov is the word chal, and then for fat, it's chel.
Yeah, so...
when it's talking about fat, it's called, it would be chelbech, not chal.
With the segel. Chelbech. So that patach is milk. Chalovech. The grammatical form means milk. Okay, let's see Radak. Now, when I have time to prepare the Radak, I'll be able to maybe skip some of the Radaks that are very grammatical. Aleph, Pas, begin list. Let's see the Radak of our first Rashi. For first Rashi, Heoch l'shoin Simcha. Okay, number two, Ki Nichol Ki Ninchal V'Hoya Marasha La'Acherim. I told you, word Nichol means profane. That's what the Mitzudos translates. Rashi disagrees. The word Nichol comes from Loshon of Nachala, an inheritance. So he learned Psham the Pasik that you rejoiced when the Beis Hamikdash, the Mikdash, became a Nachala, an inheritance to the foreign nations. They took it over. They took over the Temple Mount, and it became their property. So it doesn't mean to be, it's also true that it was profaned, but we have a different translation in Rashi, Ki Ninchal V'Hoyim Arosho L'Achedim, Pasik Dalid, Livnei Kedem, Kastim, V'Aram, Litzad, Mizrachim, the Kastim and Aram are on the east side. So he is learning, Rashi is learning that it's not, over here we have the Sifsei, okay, so there seems to be over here a Rashi is giving a different interpretation. This is a very fundamental point Rashi is making, that this Nevuah is not referring to, at least from these Pesukim, referring to the second conquest, the conquest of Paras U'Madai. I understand this long introduction, which is going to be what really the Radak says, and really it's going to be clear as we go through the Pesukim, the B'nai Kedem, that we are describing here the second conquest of the nation of Aram. The first conquest took place in the time of Nebuchadnezzar. Immediately following the Churban Beis HaMikdash, Nebuchadnezzar went on to conquer the nation of Ammon. That was described in very great detail back, maybe Perek Yud. I have here the reference to it. We learned it back before in this Sefer. According to the Mitzudos, this section, Perek Hafei, is describing the second conquest of Paras U'Madai. And that's why the terms being used here are much more intense. A complete obliteration. They're wiped off the face of the map. There no longer will be a nation of Ammon. Rashi doesn't say that. Rashi seems to say that the B'nai Kedem refers to Nebuchadnezzar. The Kastim is the nation of Nebuchadnezzar, his army. Nebuchadnezzar was the Melech of Bavel, but his army was the army of the Kastim. Aram we call Syria today, but Aram is, I guess, that was his partner. Litzad Mizrachim, they also, he says, they were called B'nai Kedem. They also participated, maybe they were the mercenaries of Nebuchadnezzar to conquer Ammon. So according to Rashi, at least at this point in time, we are describing the first conquest. We're not discussing yet the second conquest. Keep that in mind in this Rashi. Over here, I have in mind, if you have in your edition, I over here, the Sifsei Zikanim. Right, you have that in your edition. It's a parish on Rashi. No. Just like you have the Sifsei Chacham Chumash over here, and he writes, he goes through a first explanation, what it means. Where did Rashi know to say this? He's very disturbed how you can call the Kastim on the east. Rashi says, if you want to say we're referring to Paras U'Madai, then it makes sense why they're called the people from the east. Because Paras U'Madai, I don't know the geography of the ancient nations, were on the east of Ammon. But if you want to say that it refers to the Kastim and Aram, in the Sifsei Chachamim, he takes up issue with this, because in the ancient geography of where these nations stood in the world map, it doesn't seem that the Kastim and Aram were on the east in any sense from the nation of Ammon. So he writes over here, he writes, Hine Kastim b'tzofen shel Eretz Yisrael, v'ulai mikol mokmim b'mizroch, maybe they b'mizroch shel Olam. He writes that he doesn't understand. Maybe it means they're in the world, of civilization, they were in the east. But Echnami has nothing to do with being relative to Am. Then he goes on to say the tzarchin, what Rashi here means, because the pashtus of the psukim here are not dealing with Kastim and Aram. We're dealing with the second conquest of Paras and Mardai, and indeed they were on the east side of Amon. Okay, let's see Radak. Radak pasuk aleph beis vayidvar Hashem ben Adam ata hochel bepuranus haumos hashchemes le'eret Yisrael. This parak of hey begins a new theme, a new section where we're now going away from Yecheskel is not speaking to Klal Yisrael. He's giving them a break. I've given you enough mussar to absorb. Review mussar. In the meantime, I have to go off and teach. I have a speaking engagement. I'm a scholar in residence for the nation of Amon. They've invited me to come and speak in their shul on Shabbos and Amon Amoyav, and all I have to say to them is bad news. Predict their
Trump is Saudi Arabia.
The gloom and doom. The neighbors of Eretz Yisrael, shesamchu lechurbana, who took joy in their destruction. The parsha hazois. Pasach, after we've already finished describing the Churban of Eretz Yisrael, which was in this section, meaning until now Pasach b'Churban ha'umais. The Amarta, you shall speak, Levnei Amon, Yan Omreich, Omar B'losh Mekeva, Kenegin HaKnesa. He's Omreich is feminine because he's describing the nation. You will say He'och, because you said He'och, what does that mean? Inyan Simcha V'Gila, joy. V'chein he'och he'och ro'aso einenu in Tehillim v'hadavim loy v'chein tigim yonason chedva. The word he'och in translated as joy. Chedva is the word for joy. Okay, the next radak, we're going to skip because it's all grammar which I don't know. Next radak is ve'el admas yisrael ki gzuntai. Ve'el admas the dibra maschil. Ve'el admas yisrael ki no shama in radak. Vehi aseres hashvat eretz aseres hashvatim she'amda shemama mishnashesh lechizkiyahu. The time when the Sancheirif exiled the ten shvatim was in the sixth year of Chizkiyahu. Ki holchu bagoyla os samchu kasharo ki beis Yehuda os samchu kasharo ki beis Yehuda nishara holchu. Kasharo, ki beis Yehuda shenisharu holchu bagoyla. They rejoiced, and also I guess when that's the second part of the pasuk, when the Bnei Yehuda, they were also exiled by Nebuchadnezzar. So there are three sins. Okay, I'm not going to go through the Malbim and all the other Mefarshim, but all they basically say there are three different dimensions of their sin: the Beis Hamikdash, the Aseres Hashvatim, and the Malchus of Yehuda, and that's why when we describe the punishment, the punishment also is going to be broken down into three different parts corresponding to the three different expressions of joy. Okay, let's now go to the next Pasuk, Pasuk Dalet, Pasuk Hey, V'nasati, therefore what is the consequence? I'm going to V'nasati es Rabba l'nvei Gimalim. I will make Rabba, which is Rabba means the capital of Amon, Rabbas b'nei Amon, into an abode of camels. The Esbinei Amon and the cities of Amon, the suburbs, and the other city that is not the capital, the Mirbat Tzayin, a place where sheep graze, so they lie down. And when this happens, you will know, Vidatem Keni Hashem, then you will know, any survivor throughout the world will recognize that Hashem is faithful, Hashem predicted, and Hashem warned about their destruction and punishment for their sins. Now there are two different interpretations of what it means to be in the Beit Tzayin. Either it means is that the Bnei Paras u'Modai, they were barbarians. They were nomads. I mean, that's what it seems to say according to this, is that when they came, even though it said in the previous passage that they're going to build palaces, they're going to build Armonos, Tiroi Seyam, or Mishkinoi Seyam, those were structures, but by and large, the way they live is by having camels roam around. They're very primitive. They're very primitive people. So they have nice buildings here and there. But by and large, they're going to be camels, and it's going to be tzon. Until this point in time, it was a modern city. Rabbas b'nei Amon and the other suburbs were modern, sophisticated cities. Everyone had cars, motorcycles, everyone had smartphones, everyone was walking around with technology. And now when this new nation comes in, Parsa Modai, they're not into this stuff. They don't care for this technology. They build nice little palaces here and there. By and large, they let the camels roam around and the tzoyim roam around. Or what it means is, it means later on. First, they're going to come, they're going to build palaces and mishkanas. But eventually, they're going to leave. They're not going to be happy. People are only really happy in their where they come from. And since the people are from Paras and Madai, they're it's not their homeland. Eventually, they're going to leave. And when they leave, the land will become a ghost town. It'll become a ghost town, and will just be for a Neve Gemalim and a place Lemirbatz Tzon. So let's see the Mitzudos David Pasik Hey. Oma es Rabba. What is Rabba? Rabba is the capital of Ammon. He ir hamalucha limve gemalim ki yacharivu oisav yamidu sham gemalim. They will destroy Mitzudos thorns. They will destroy the land, and they will import camels. The esbnei Ammon return lema shor or esbnei Ammon. The other cities of Ammon ki ani Hashem. When this happens, you will recognize I am Hashem and hanemon leshalem gemul. Hashem brings reward. Hashem brings punishment for those who deserve it. Rashi pasuk hey, there is no Rashi. Radak pasuk hey, v'nasati es rabba hihi ayamalucha lindvei gemalim to a place of camels ki achaz man sheanichu oisa paras mode paras. So here he's learning later, at a later point in time, paras mode will get tired of living in this land that it's not theirs, and they'll abandon it, and then it'll become to a place of camels. Oh, what it means is me'atz oy me'atzmam o mipnei am acher sheyava yalehem. Another nation will invade them later on. Tia chareva v'tihye lindve gemalim ulamir batzon. Ultimately, it will be a ghost town. V'datem k'ni Hashem teidu k'ni Hashem hayochol al hakol u'mashkiach b'hakol u'ma shebo al yisrael ba'avoinam hoya. What came upon the Jewish people was due to their sins. U'mashu yovel lachem gam k'ni l'fi shes machtem le'ed yisrael. What's going to come upon you is a punishment for rejoicing over the tragedy. Aid means the tragedy of Klal Yisrael. Okay, next
passage.
I have shesmachtem, shesmachtem. Yeah, you don't have that?
Yeah, what's next?
Le'ed.
No, we have
le'eretz Yisrael. Okay, shesmachtem. I have here le'ed, which means tragedy. All right, different
that
verses.
Le'ed
Yisrael, that's what I have. Okay, let's go to pasuk vav. Kikoyam Hashem. Here we go in more detail. Kikoyam Hashem Elokim. So says Hashem Yan. We're describing in detail the acts of celebration that they rejoiced, how they rejoiced when Klal Yisrael suffered. So first thing is they clapped their hands. The word mach achoyot means to clap your hand. Virak virak acho birago means to stamp with your feet. Vatismach b'chol, and you rejoice b'chol shotcha b'nefesh. Shotcha means bizyonos, bizui. Benefesh means with intensity, with your full joy. You rejoiced in being mevaze. You rejoiced by despising the Jewish people with your soul. El Admas, concerning El Admas Yisrael, because what you have done, you've clapped your hands, you stamp with your feet, you rejoiced by being mevaze, the Jewish people, the land of the Jews. Pasuk Zayin Lachin. Therefore, Hinni Notisi Asyodi Olech Hashem says, "I'm going to stretch out my hand against you. Unesaticha Levas LaGoyim. I'm going to make you despised among the nations." Now, there's also it's a Kivach Siv. It's a very unusual Kivach Siv. The Siv is Labag. Labag means food.
Yeah.
Like. Labag means what does it mean? The food. We have by Doniel. Daniel, we have there the word bag in the, I forgot the pasuk.
The
pas bag. Pas means a portion of bread. So it means you're going to be fodder. You're going to be fodder for the nations of the world. And the way, yet, the way we read it, the kri is levaz. Levaz means as the bezoyon, to despise. Now, there's not really much of a relationship between, normally we have a kri v'chsev, there's normally a relationship between the two words. There's not much of a relationship on a very
simple. In essence, it means the same.
Right, they're just going to eat you up. They're going to wipe you out. But it's a different connotation. Here we read as this, you'll be despised, and that's a midah k'neged midah, because that fits with the word shot. Shatcha, the previous word, in the previous pasuk, Shatcha, Shin, Aleph, Tes, Chaf, means, it means Bizyonos, and here you're going to be a source of Bizyon, Lagoyim, V'chraticha min ha'amim. I'm going to cut you off from the nations, V'havadaticha min ha'arot, I'm going to cause you to be lost from the lands, Ashmidcha, I will destroy you, and then V'yodata ki ani Hashem. Notice all of the different expressions. There is, you're going to be levaz lagom, that's number one. Vichraticha is number two. Vehavadaticha is three. And ashmidcha is four. Four lishonos of churban. Four different expressions. Pretty intense. Let's see what it says in Pasuk Vav and Zayin in the Mitzudot Stavin. I didn't see, there must be some significance. You have arotzos. You have the Amim and the Arotzos. So the Amim means Yinachmi Party, you're going to be ejected from the United Nations. Yinachmi Party, you're not going to be recognized as a state. You're going to be Avalticham and Arotzos, your boundaries will be swallowed up by another nation. You'll no longer be on the map. Some other nation will just absorb you. Will absorb you. So you're not going to be a nation, you're not going to have a geographical location. Ashmidcha maybe means your culture. At least you know in the science books, at least know that you're not going to have be a nation, you're not going to have boundaries, but it'll always be French fries. People always remember you have a certain contribution to this world, right? You'll always have some, every nation has their contribution. French fries really was invented by Thomas Jefferson, right? That was really his, it's not really a French thing, it's really an American thing.
Freedom fries.
Whatever it is, so whatever your contribution, your cultural contribution will also be wiped out. And you'll be a source of bizarre. Four different themes being expressed here describing the ultimate obliteration. It's pretty powerful stuff. Let's see, Pasuk Vav in the Mitzudot, Stavet Mach Achyod, you clap your hands. Ba'avor, Shekisa Kapcha Zelozeb, Derech Simcha, you clap your hands, Derech Simcha, V'rak Acha Boragel, you banged with your feet. But atita beregel baretz, you kicked with your feet into the ground. Ki oz nirakilu mirakea umiradeid haaretz. The word raka means to flatten. It means like you take by the crushing. They took gold and they flattened it. And there the word used was raka reish kuf ayin. It means to flatten. So when you step with your feet on the ground, it looks like to an observer who doesn't know what's going on, like you're trying to flatten the earth. You are flattening and thinning out the earth. We learned back in Perek Vav, we had the same idea. You hit with your hand. He's asking a question. Don't we find these expressions of clapping with your hand and hitting with and banging with your feet is used for mourning? This is mourning. In Eichel we have this also. Hine, so he writes over here this idea. There's a very deep idea. Yesh dvarim shoysim la'avelus ulasimcha ulam ein in yadam shava. Uchemoyshe mivim chalilim l'meis l'kala. For example, we bring flutes. And we play flutes for a chasim kala. And we play flutes at a funeral. So this is the way Hashem made things, is that there are different expressions that we do that are identical. If you would not have sound, if you turn that off the volume and you just have the video and you see people clapping and banging on with their feet on the ground and playing flutes and crying, you really don't know. Are they at a funeral or are they at a wedding? You don't know what's going on because emotion, extreme emotion is expressed the same way. Okay, some really want to say, I told you this from Rav Shimon Schwab, it's a controversial idea, not everyone holds on this idea, is that the truth is the primary emotion is tsar. That's the primary. Clapping with your feet, clapping your hands, banging with your feet and playing flutes, the primary motion is tsar. So why then do we do this at a wedding? Because every moment of joy, every intense moment of joy, you're really bringing up from your psyche tsar. Because to come to a moment of joy, the greater the joy, that you have to have gone through a process of pain. That's the reality, frustration. There's no such thing as just joy. Joy, you're happy, you go to a simcha.
Tears of joy?
Yeah, tears of joy. Why does a person cry? when you're crying, when it's not because you're happy. The moment of happiness triggers the memory subconsciously of the pain that you've experienced to get to this moment. You come to a wedding, you know, some people come to a wedding and like they see the miracle. They know how much pain and how much frustration and how much tefillah and how many miracles had to happen to come to this moment in time. So it brings up all the pain, the frustration. The grandparents are much more emotional at a wedding than the chasen kala. You have a chasen kala that's 20 years old. Okay, the boy and girl, 20 years old, they come to the wedding and they're dancing and they're happy and they're holding this joke. Okay, we've all been to weddings like that, right? Chasen was crying.
He had an onion in his hand.
But sometimes you go to a wedding, you go to a wedding, and it's a child wedding. A bunch of kids are getting married. They know what's going on. They don't know from nothing. They're somehow this one have a party, and a boy meets a girl. They know this, that. They get married. Hopefully everything will be fine and good. And the grandparents, Holocaust survivors, they're in a whole different world. They never in their wildest dreams imagined it would come. They would merit to see such a thing. Their life was in their hands. They saw their lives. It was a miracle they survived. And to come and to rebuild in America. And then Yiddishkeit and the Chulu would have children and have grandchildren to see such a thing. There's an enormous amount of emotion. What's the emotion? It's pain. It's not simcha.
It's related to their parents. The parents should have seen this. It'd be nice.
Right, exactly. So they're thinking about who's not here. Exactly. All of these things are going, many times you can't even define. It's all subconscious. It's very hard even to define in words and to even know what you're feeling. It's all, these are things which are subconscious, but what is coming forth? Pain, not joy. The contrast, it's a moment of joy, but the emotion that is being poured out is an emotion of pain. So that's what Schwab says, that Laos Lovo, Umocha Hashem Elokim es dima me'al kol panim. So he's medayik. What does it mean, me'al kol panim? I don't remember the pasuk. I'm not saying correctly, but he's medayik in the pasuk that it's that even at times of joy there will no longer be tears. The tears will be removed even at times of simcha, because it's going to be a different type of simcha which we don't relate to in this world, a simcha that does not derive from tzar. It's not a simcha that's derived from tzar, it's a simcha that's pure simcha. We don't even know what pure simcha is, because we don't know how to measure pure simcha. That's going to be la'asalav. But now the simcha. So it's not for nothing that here we have this idea which is going to be taught us over and over, all before, the same exact thing is that there's really no difference between a wedding and a funeral. At a wedding and a funeral, if you don't have the volume and you look at the people, you don't know what's going on. Is this a simcha or is this a funeral? Because there's clapping, there's banging with the feet, they're playing flutes. What's going on here? It's a moment of a time of extreme emotion, and that's why that's the hashkacha Hashem brought about that these things. So if, even though we had living in the Sefer Yecheskel, this expression is being used in reference to tsar. Here, the same exact expressions are being used in reference to joy. Okay. So this is the Mitzudos. Next words of the Mitzudos, Vatismach b'chol shotcha b'nefesh. You rejoice. Now this word we had a few times. It's a good vocabulary word. Shotcha means bizyonos. B'nefesh means with your full emotion, your full neshama. She somachta b'chol ha-bizyon shalcha. You rejoice all with a full sense of this, of a bizyonos. She bizisa b'naf shecha es admas yisrael. You despised, you looked down, you mocked the land of Yisrael. But these psukim here, they're very powerful psukim being directed towards modern times, the United Nations. How many resolutions have been passed since the founding of the United Nations against the state of Israel? The vast majority, I used to know these numbers by heart. Soon coming Tishrei, I have to go back and review these numbers. The whole United Nations was only created for the purpose of rejoicing and being what it says in this pasuk. And you know, this should put this instead of putting there v'gar hakeves im, what does it say? What do they have in the United Nations? They have the pasuk, the times of Mashiach will be peace, and the keves with the zeiv will live together. They got it all wrong. That's not what they should put on the front door. They should put this pasuk. This pasuk is lachain. You know why? Because of what it says in the previous pasuk of what you've done. Yan mach acha yod v'rak acha b'ragel v'tismach b'chol shotcha b'nefesh el admas Yisrael. Isn't this really what they do there the whole day? Isn't this really what goes on over there? Is they mevaze the admas Yisrael with the full intensity b'chol shotcha. Benefesh, this is the pus that belongs on the outside or the front door, etched in marble in the United Nations. Achman al-Islam, that's what we've come to. Okay, so here we come to now, but listen, you have to also give credit where credit is due. They did authorize, they did acknowledge the state, the legitimacy of the state of Israel. So, I mean, that's priceless.
Also,
okay,
helped,
that's priceless. It promoted anti-Semitism. Yeah, all right, yeah, whatever. But we only hold our head up high in Chutz Li'aretz. That's the fact, because there is a state of Israel. That's a fact. If there was no, yeah, everyone, Pasha, you know
speech.
What?
His very famous speech was that UN was created for one purpose. Created for one person to establish the
state of Israel, and that's it. That's it. Exactly. We only Chutz Li'aretz. We only, it's a mitzias, we don't even appreciate what it's like not to have a state of Israel. There was no state of Israel, you couldn't walk the street. They'll look at you, they'll spit on you. You couldn't walk. Yeah, the fact that there's a state of Israel, a Jew can hold his head up high anywhere in the world. It's a mitzias, so you have to give credit where credit is due. It is a chesed, it is a tremendous chesed. Let's now go to the next words in, let's see, Rashi. This is Rashi. Rashi, Pasuk. Pasuk Vav Yan Mach Acha Yod, you have clapped your hands. Virak Acha Birogel L'Shem Simcha. V'Yavav Yisheberosh HaSefer in Perek Vav Amar Kein Linyan Evel for mourning. Hakei Bichapcha Urika Biraglicha V'Emar and Seach Yesh Tvarim She'Oisin Oisam L'Evel L'Simcha. There are things that are done both for mourning and for joy. Aval Ein Yom Shava. They're not the same. Obviously, the different emotion. Mechin chalilim lekala v'lemes. We go and we play the flute for both the kala and the mes. Everyone knows the joke. When a person gets married and a person dies, he asks the same three questions: how old were they? How old was the mes? How old was he? And how old is the chasen kala? The second question is: how long did they muchazach? Did he die right away, or was he sick for a long time? So chasen kala, how much? How long did it take them to find each other? How long did it go? And the third thing is, how much money is involved? How much did the mace leave over to the Yerusha? And how much is it a rich shidduch? How much money is here between the chasen and kala? Now also, what else Chazal say? What is the third idea? Is that the only reason why we get married is because we die. That was one of the songs. The Gemara records one of the songs that the lyrics of one of the songs by a wedding is Vailon ki Mason, something like that. Woe to us that we die. That was the nigga. They weren't singing Od Yishama of Yar Yehuda. When they were singing Klad, they were going to the chuppah, they were singing Vailon, woe to us that we die. Interesting, in Eretz Yisrael, see here when you go to the chuppah in America, they play a Lebedek Nigam. Oh, Yisham Bar Yehuda. Is that Kolbach's nigun? A different nigun? I don't know. They play a Lebedik nigun. In Eretz Yisrael, I don't know. I just know years ago. I remember my brother got married in Eretz Yisrael. They play a very sad nigun. When you go to the chasam, when you march down the chasam kala, it's not a happy nigun. It's
funeral march.
It's not a funeral, but it has a certain sadness. It definitely has a certain sadness, and that's really what it says in the Gemara. The Gemara says that the song you sing at a wedding is "Woe to us that we die." Marriage is a necessary requirement because of death. In order for the world, Adam and Chava, if they would not have died, there would be no need to get married and have children. There would no need to get married. There would no need to have children because you live forever. It's only because a person dies that puts upon him pressure. Time is running out. Life is very short. Time is running out. I need to leave over something in this world, which means I must get married and have a child.
It's an extension of you.
Yeah. So it's not a happy event. It's a recognition of my mortality. And therefore, that was the expression that was expressed by a wedding. And Eretz Yisrael, Ad Hayom Hazeh, at least by the wedding that I went to, is a very beautiful, sad nigun, which definitely puts you in a very different frame of mind than in America, in Chutz La'aretz, where you go down to the chuppah, you go to the badeking, and they're much more merry, merry.
Is it sad or serious?
It's what?
Serious, maybe.
It's serious. All right, I mean, I guess it depends on the person, how music. Very serious event. Okay, let's see what it says in the Radak. Radak pasik va of the pasik vav. Pasik vav. Ki koy marsham yan machacha. Yo, you have clapped your hands. Bis l'simcha l'shimloin eretz Yisrael to over the destruction of the land eretz Yisrael. He kisa kaf al el kaf l'simcha. All of the trees of the field will clap hands. Okay, they're going to clap hands. That's very strange because a tree has hands. I guess so. A tree, ki adam eitz hasadeh. So it says here they will clap hands. Say this pasuk on Rosh Hashanah. This was by Shlomo HaMelech when he became king. They clapped hands and they said, Yechi HaMelech. A person bangs with his foot on the ground. This is dancing. That's not what the Mitzudos in Rashi said. He learns that banging, the Mitzudos says you bang on the ground, it looks like you're trying to flatten the ground in your place. Here, this is dancing. It's an expression of dancing. Okay, we'll skip the next Radak because it is all grammar. Let's go to the word. The chol shotcha b'nefesh. The next Yibam Aschil, targum vayivaz Esav es habechora. Esav despised the bechora. Very good targum. It says v'shot Esav. This is a translation. It means to despise. She samachta l'ra'asam b'chol b'zoyon shehayisa mevaza isam b'nafshecha uvil libcha. Every form of disgrace that you can heap upon the Jewish people, you did not miss. You did not miss a beat. All right. Good morning. Okay. So this concludes this pasuk. Okay. We have another minute. Let's go to the next pasuk. Where we did pasuk zayin. Pasuk zayin. We didn't do pasuk zayin yet in the Radak. Lochain therefore. Okay, I'm skipping the next Radak. I'm skipping because that's again grammar. Let's go to Pasuk Zayin, the beginning of Pasuk Zayin in the Radak. And therefore, Nusatik Levag Lagoyim. So here he discusses the Krivich Siv. Levag Siv in Yonag Machol Kemo Pas Bak in Daniel. The Kri Levas. The Inyan Echad. It's all the same. You'll be fatter. You'll be despised to the degree where the people will just consume all of your assets. Inyan Echad Ki Hamachol Hu Moshal Alabiza. Food represents disgrace. V'agimul v'hazayin mischalfin ba'alfa beisa de'at bach. Okay, there's an aleph base where you break up the aleph base into three sections. From aleph through tests. Yeah. And you interchange the first, the decimals, the decimal system, the first nine letters, from first ten letters. There is no zero. There is no ephes. One through nine, and you exchange the aleph for the test. So in that system, you're going to exchange the zayin, the gimel, for the zayin. Therefore, it turns from bat, bag, into baz. Okay. Let's see. All right, it's already an hour, so we'll stop over here with pasuk test. Good morning. How are you? Okay, today...